Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's program. I'm Neil Stavem. Always good to have you along. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's at the phone. So looking forward to a good hour today. We're going to talk, Ted, about NBDs today.
And what is that?
Not bad donuts.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
that is not not what it is at all.
So, my favorite food.
Sure. We are glad to have you with us today, and we brought back a good friend who was kind enough to join us again as we talk about neurobiological diagnoses. And you know, you're probably familiar with the common term autism. It's Asperger's syndrome, but there are a number of others as well, you know, ADHD and a variety of things that we're going to talk about, and particularly how we relate and treat and care for those and how families, you know, are affected with these diagnoses in their children, which I think probably seems to be occurring more and more all the time. And, of course, Ted, there's been lots of news lately about, you know, vaccines and all those kinds of things.
Sure.
And so we're going to jump into some of that today. So.
Yeah, a lot of diagnosis and the spectrum, I think, too.
Yeah.
You know, people often say, you know, where do you fall on the spectrum or do you fall on the spectrum?
Yeah.
So this will be great.
And, you know, offer some help and encouragement from Mary Wangren, who's a businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, and advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses. And she's been a dedicated volunteer at her church and in scouting, and a mother of two children who have had the diagnosis themselves. And so we'll talk a little bit about her own family experience. She provides education seminars to teach and train special parents of special kids and works to bring people together in schools, churches, and civic groups with resources and understanding. And that's what we want today. In fact, we'll open up the phone lines right away if you have a question. Or would like to just get some feedback. Mary would love to just interact with you. And the phone number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. One of the reasons we wanted to talk with Mary, April is Autism Awareness Month. We thought we should get this in before the month is over, but and Mary, I'm sure, as obviously as you know, as a parent with a child with that diagnosis of autism, I mean that it's not just a month awareness. I mean, it's you're aware of it 24/7, whether
it
you
is.
Want to be or not.
Right? Yes, so, live with it 24/7. It's always there. It never goes away.
Your son, George, is now, is he 23?
23 years 23, old, yes.
So.
Yes, and he is working at a large regional grocery shop, grocery store, and he is a cashier, absolutely loves it.
Good.
And it's given him a whole new perspective of not only, you know, work and funding. It was funny because he looked at me just yesterday and said, $2,000 in the bank, Mom, not bad. And the first thing I want to do is save it.
Sure.
But but no, it's given him a perspective in terms of job and his future, because right now he's not at school. He was currently he was going to school. He was majoring in music. He has a fabulous voice. But one of the things this fearful mother said, George, that doesn't necessarily pay the bills.
Yeah.
And so now he's looking at other opportunities out there, talking about looking at some business and maybe majoring in business.
Sure.
And so it's every adventure is always new, and you come out the other end smiling.
How old was he when you sort of decided to pursue a diagnosis or get a diagnosis and really begin to understand it?
Well, it was funny because hindsight is, you know, 20/20, but it wasn't until George was in first or second grade that we really noticed that there was something going on. There was, of course, the
and
friendship
obviously this
issues.
Was 20 years ago, and there's
absolutely
a lot has changed in 20 years.
A lot has changed, and one being just being able to observe and see those different characteristics coming out. So George received the diagnosis of ADD as well as obsessive compulsive disorder, and when he was in second grade. And it wasn't until I had started a support group, because there are times that parents feel like they're on an island. They're all alone when their child is diagnosed. I mean, I remember the joy under happily accepting George's diagnosis, knowing that there was a reason for why he acted that he did the way he was. But then on the second hand, you're always fearful of trying to tell anybody, because I hate to say it, but kids with neurobiological diagnosis, there comes a stigma, a reputation. There's an attitude that people a lot of times have preset, especially if they don't live with it. So when I started the support group, it was amazing, very positive group. We brought in speakers. And I remember that we brought in a social worker from a middle school. And her forte was, or currently is too, she's still there, is Asperger's syndrome and all the characteristics that she was defining, the eye contact, the focusing, the hyper-focus children with Asperger's do on particular subjects that are very much interested to themselves, not necessarily to those that are around them. They thrive in structural environments, you know. Anyway, long and the short of it, it was between 7th and 8th grade that George received the diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. The thing that a lot of people talk about today is it seems like a lot of kids are getting the autism spectrum type diagnosis. And is it because it's the diagnosis of the 21st century? Not necessarily. I think it's because parents are very intuitive. The minute their kids, I mean, we've got books, what to expect when you're expecting, what to expect after the child is born. We already know what is basically in the box in terms of the way these children should be acting when they are growing up. Your child should walk by this age and your child should talk by this age. And when the children aren't, the parents start asking questions. And I think that's one reason why you see a lot of parents are more on top of the characteristics, therefore they are able to go to their doctor and get led in the right direction in terms of the diagnosis.
Say a word about maybe just, we talked a little bit, just allude to the spectrum. Talk mm-hmm. about some of the characteristics and what we're including in
NBD.
NBD, yeah.
In the NBD piece, the reason I call it NBD is all of the things that we're talking about, whether it be ADD, autism, learning disabilities, obsessive compulsive disorder, bipolar, anything that is neurological, it basically comes down to each of them has their own specific characteristics to be able to visualize and use it in terms of diagnostics and even working with these kids. But the way that the reason I call it MBD is an acronym, which I'm not always a fan of, but it's so much when you're talking about these different diagnoses. If you look at like Olympic rings, There's a place where the rings touch. And through my experience, one thing we talked about, I do not have initials behind my name. I have a BA in biology, but I don't have a master's or a PhD. And what I have is mammology, a degree in that, because I live with it 24/7. But one thing that I've experienced over the last 20 years, you might say, is you don't always see kids that really have just a clean, clear diagnosis of ADD, because usually there's something else that goes with it. And where, if you look at those Olympic rings and where they touch, there's a synergistic relationship. George's primary diagnosis is Asperger's, but he also has characteristics of ADD as well as obsessive compulsive disorder. And when you tell people, it's a lot of words. It's a lot of definitions, and that's where we get into NBDs, because it really doesn't matter what their diagnosis is. Each of these kids are individuals, and they show characteristics in a different fashion. So instead of just worrying about terms, I just say, why not just a diagnosis? Why not just term it inside that Olympic rings?
Mary Weingren.
Did that help?
Yes, no, that's good. Mary Weingren is my guest today, and we're talking about parents and children with the neurobiological diagnosis, and some ways that maybe we can handle parenting better. We're going to get into big issues. There's the news always about vaccines and any links there. We'll talk about maybe are there foods that maybe exacerbate some of these behaviors, medications perhaps. We'll get to some of the encouragement and training that's going on out through support groups and other things. We'll get to all that in just a moment. We'll take our break now and come back and invite you to join the conversation, too. Maybe you've had some experience or you've had some help from a support group. We'd love to just hear your story. You can chat with Mary, who is, we talk about, has her degree in mammology and brings a great perspective to us today as a volunteer and an advocate for parents and families with autism or Asperger's or any of these other neurobiological disorders. Join us at 877-933-2484. That's the phone number, 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient to drop us a note, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there, and we'll talk more in just a moment. Stay tuned. some encouragement for us today as we talk about living with children that have a diagnosis of a neurobiological diagnosis. So maybe it's ADD or it's OCD or it's Asperger syndrome, autism. Getting some perspective today from Mary Wangren, a businesswoman, wife, support group leader, and advocate on behalf of families with children with autism or other diagnoses. We invite you to join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Mary's recently done some new education and training in the area, particularly with Scouts. We're going to talk a little bit about that, and there's some material online that can be a good resource for you. But maybe before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about, the connection between autism and vaccines that they've that's been debunked, I think, several times, but
right.
I'm sure you dealt with this as a parent and say, all right, did, is there anything to this?
Well, that's really a good question because you hate to say it. It's kind of like a bad rumor. It just never goes away.
Yeah.
And in actuality, yes, I guess sometimes I have looked to say, what is the cause of this? But in actuality, when it comes down to this vaccination, it actually has been debunked. It has done a lot of different studies. As a matter of fact, USA Today has an article. You can just Google it on usatoday.com that has an article about this exact thing. And I think it just came out like 4 months ago,
yeah.
Indicating that the purpose that came behind all that vaccination was by a physician and his wife from England. And what actually happened is they had falsified like 14 different studies that they had created, and it was all based on the opportunity that a lawyer had created that wanted to sue the vaccination companies. What's happened to them is they have lost their medical license to practice. But now what's happening is I guess there's a pediatric study that's been done by the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. There's been a number of different places, but it's taking a long time for that idea to be
go
gone.
Away.
Yeah, it really is, which is sad.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about maybe the nutrition side of it. I mean, there's lots of talk about, are there particular foods that maybe minimize the effects of NBDs? And maybe we should talk, I guess, we sort of talked about effects. I mean, But are there foods that maybe make things worse or better? I mean, have you done some study on that as well?
Well, I've checked it out. I have done some studies, not on my own personal studies.
Yeah.
I've just looked into studies and stuff. But I think what it basically comes down to, and this sounds, again, it's up to the parents. I think talking to physicians is really important. But what it comes down to is, yes, having the good stuff, the proteins and the fiber kind of foods that enhance the brain. The things that keep the brain going. Now, those aren't really fast acting, but what they do is once they get in the system and you've got a continuous good diet, it keeps the brain working and a lot better. One of the things, of course, that we always talk about, and we all know this as parents of neurotypical as well as kids with MBD, you got to be careful on the sugar. That's why when you look at carbohydrates, fast-acting carbohydrates, we all know, a donut in the morning, even though they are my favoritest of the world, but they end up on my hips.
Yeah.
Don't say anything.
Yeah.
But anyway, you get this fast high, and you feel like you're functioning, but then you end up dropping an energy lower than before you even started the donut. And so there are really huge, implications on those kinds of things, which parents know, but sometimes we need that reminder. Now, one of the things that I've heard of parents, I haven't done this. George's best friend had done this. His mom and dad did up until he was like 17 years old. They eliminated things that had the red dye in it.
Mm.
And the yellow dye, because there is some concern that too, hyper exasperates the characteristics. But basically, having a good diet, there are studies coming out saying, particular vitamins and stuff. And a physician will tell you the only reason you need to replace vitamins is if you're not getting them with the food choices that you make. I mean, good diet for kids of any NBD or neurotypical, that's huge. But it's just a matter of watching what goes in the mouth. That's my personal opinion.
Sure.
But talking to your physician about the diet is particularly
important. Did you have questions about medications? I mean, did you use different medications over the years?
Absolutely. Medication, I'm not one that's on the bandwagon for saying you must take medication. Medication has worked for me. And
okay. And
the difference is, which sometimes we forget about it, the medication doesn't take away, doesn't help take away this diagnosis. It's, I hate to say it, it's not like blood pressure pills or, cholesterol pills. But what it actually does is it helped tames down the characteristics. Medication for us has worked very well, but it's been a lot of trial and error. And that's the hardest part is when your child is taking a medication and a physician or a new medication comes out, suddenly your child may not be acting in the way they did when they had the previous medication. We found that George tried different medications, some that were non-stimulating. They did not work well for him. He even had more angry, violent tendencies than when he was on the stimulant-type medications. One of the things we're finding, too, is with medications is a lot of these kids, their brains can't shut down at night. Whether it be a medication, which can be a real issue, that's why they don't advocate medications after a particular time of the day, depending on how a child can burn that off. But at night, these kids really have a hard time shutting down their brain. In my son's case, we used to wake up at 2 a.m, and he'd be on our bedroom floor playing with our golden retriever. And that's as much fun and as cute as it was, it's not really beneficial during the next day. And we had to talk to our physician, and he is on non-addictive. He's on a medication that helps with sleep. But see, that's another thing when you talk about medications, and I talk to in the scouts and the non-scouting world, is when you are at events, whether they're church retreats or you're camping, even as a family, you have to make sure that the medications are administered when the parents advise them. Because if you give a child, like my son, a sleeping medication 15 minutes before quote-unquote bedtime, It's gotta get into a system, and it takes a little bit while. It can take up to an hour. So it's nothing that you just hand them at midnight and say, go to bed.
Yeah.
So.
And I would assume, too, just even I was going to ask about that sleep. I mean, I'm sure that that's probably becomes an issue, isn't it, when, you know, school start early. I mean, there's been lots of issues about, you know, and so they're just getting the cycle gets off, and it just
Absolutely.
Gets worse day by day, perhaps.
It does. And that's one of the things that's really tough, is that because these kids, it takes them longer to go to sleep, it takes them longer to get up. And that's why it's funny, because there are little, even there's alarm clocks that bounce off the table onto the floor, and that it rolls. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Yeah.
There are alarms that you have to basically almost take apart that, you know, then these are all, you know, for these kids as well as those of us who just like to sleep. But it has a huge effect. And that's why getting your child into a routine, because they thrive on it. But I know that we do that. But sometimes you have to be more rigid with their routines, especially sleep. One of the things that we find with kids with a neurobiological diagnosis, which we probably benefits kids that are neurotypical, is when it does come time for bedtime, when you have kids shower or take a bath, the warm water relaxes them, you know, having them into bed, reading a book, something that basically brings them down, what I call from their high. That was one of the things that tipped us off with George. He could not... You know, he would be marching around in Sunday school and singing songs when he was 3 years old. And then when everybody else could just nicely sit down on the floor and listen to the teacher, he wanted to keep going. He couldn't come down from that excitement. And so what you learn is these kids need to slowly come down and relax. One thing you find out with kids, too, when you talk about this bedtime sleeping thing, because they may or may not be on medication, what happens is they're not always hungry, particularly on medication, because they're stimulants. So they'll have their breakfast. Lunchtime is usually pretty minimal for them, and it's usually the stuff that they like the most. I had a young man that was on a retreat. I did a religious retreat not too long ago, and he did not eat the regular food that our quartermasters were providing. He liked yogurt, and he had, like, for one weekend, he had like 10 little containers of yogurt. And I figured as long as he was eating the yogurt, I wasn't going to bug him. But what we find out is that by the end of the day, and it's even supper time, these kids may not be eating as much as a neurotypical kid. When it comes around 8, 9 o'clock at night, they start grazing in the kitchen. They're hungry. And even if they're at their bedtime, it's good to give them something, because kids and people, I love to eat at night. You always sleep better sometimes, you know. So that's even something to take in consideration, is when you send a child to bed hungry, is even harder to have them settle in.
You know, routines are always, I mean, I think probably always good for kids, right? Kids need boundaries and routines.
Mm-hmm.
But are there routines that maybe don't work, or that we need to be flexible on if we have a child with a neurobiological the diagnosis?
You know, that's really interesting because one of the things that these kids, yes, routines are really huge. The thing that really blows their world, you might say, is when you change that routine. And it is just a matter of they like to know what's going to happen. They, even though they're chaotic inside, they're internally, they're kind of chaotic. They need that external organization. But simple things as easy as, I tell this to leaders all the time, warning them. We're going to be going to the beach in a half an hour, and then we're going to go in 15 minutes. We're going to go in 10 minutes. We're going to be ready to go. These kids need warning because it makes them feel in control of their environment. They're not one to say, okay, we're going to go get ice cream. It's not that they don't want ice cream, but you just threw them off altogether. That is one of the hugest things about when you change a child's routine. Letting them know what's going on. It's funny because I talk about this a lot. When we as adults go to a meeting or even our day, when you come into work, you kind of have a routine of how you get through the morning, your lunch, you have meetings, you have a calendar. When we have kids, we kind of basically expect them to be able to merge into our routine or, you know, they just can work on the fly. And that's why sometimes it's just a matter of putting a day schedule on the refrigerator. I tell that too when kids go to scout meetings or even Sunday school or confirmation. If kids come in and they have some idea of what's going to take place that night, maybe it's not going to follow the exact time schedule, but if they know that it's going to be B before C and then D, they are a lot easier to deal with other than the unknown. And when they are like that, sometimes they are also the ones that are a little OCD and are constantly reminding the adults of what's coming next.
Sure.
Squirrel, you know.
good insight, practical help and encouragement. We're going to talk more in just a moment with Mary Wangerin. We're talking, Mary is a businesswoman, a wife support group leader and advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses. April's Autism Awareness Month. We want to not only be aware, but learn how we can maybe more effectively support and encourage parents and maybe be, you know, better parenting tips as well for all of us. You're welcome to join the conversation. Have a question or a perspective to share? You can join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484 or online. You can send us an email if you go to myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Then click on the Connecting Faith show page. More coming up. Past the hour, and talking today with Mary Wangerin, businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, and advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological disorders. We're going to continue our conversation here in this half hour. I invite you to join with us at 877-93-FAITH. Just reminded me, I forgot to mention, Ted, at the beginning of the show, that for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, there's a movie coming out called Noble, and it's about a woman, someone probably like Mary, who is just passionate about caring about kids, and there's a campaign with her called She Is Noble. We've got details about that on our website. It's a woman who went to Vietnam and saved thousands and thousands of kids in orphanage that were exploited. And so it's quite a story, and we've got some tickets. You can sign up for free tickets. And you can do that on our website. So
that's the key word, I think.
Free, yeah,
free.
Free
is always good.
Free is good. So just want to mention that, and we'll have that up for a week or so. You can just sign up. Details are online. So go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Mary, we've talked a little bit about neurobiological diagnosis. Your 23-year-old son. You had a number of years just seeing what sort of worked and what didn't. You got involved in scouting early on. In fact, you've done some training, a new training, some online training and kind of a curriculum that you developed, right? Talk a little bit about the training.
Okay. One of the things, we got involved early on in scouting because I come from a family. My father and my brother both were Eagle Scouts, and so, of course, we had to follow in those footsteps.
Sure.
And it was always going to be the activity for my husband and my son. But here I am, 20 years later, no. But what I do is, because of George's experiences with his diagnosis, I have to admit that there are a lot of people out there that still are still pretty... If you live with a neurotypical child, there's no need to investigate diagnosis, right? And so because of that, we still to this day, I was on Sunday, I was talking to a group of people about kids with NBDs and working with them. But because of that, it got me involved in terms of teaching other adults how to work with kids with, at the time, it was just ADD. And then it's grown bigger. And as George's diagnosis and as he's gotten older, I'm proud to say George does have his Eagle, or he's achieved the rank of Eagle Scout. And, but I continue, even though George is 23, my husband and I are still involved. He is involved in a different piece of that. I am involved in training. That's why I've developed these things. I have to say, I've had a lot of opportunities to travel throughout Minnesota, down south, close to the South Dakota border, over in Wisconsin for sure, talking to units that have had situations where scouts that have a diagnosis are not quite fitting in. And it's not that they just don't fit in. It's sometimes we need to talk to people about how to give them the tools to help these kids fit in. And that was why 4 years ago I had come up with this concept, because I hate to say it, a lot of times we would hear, we as in the Northern Star Council that's up here in Minnesota, we would get notice from parents or leaders in a unit or even professional scouters that are what we call district executives, where there was a child that was having a really hard time. Long and the short of it, to help accommodate this, and because I can't be everywhere at all time, and I'm not saying that I'm the only one, because there's lots of people that are out there. But what we did is I presented to the Innovation Committee at the Northern Star Council. They have funding that is that's available for techniques and opportunities for volunteers that could enhance the experience that kids can have. I went and I applied 4 years ago. And I received a grant to create a video to work with kids with neurobiological diagnosis. It's a video that I have to say, had to go back a second time, ask for a little bit more money. But this video is now out, and I'm so excited. It came out a couple weeks ago, was our big rollout. But what it is, it's a video. It's in four parts. We have a study guide, and I know you're going to post that website on your web page. But what it basically does is it talks about actual what a diagnosis is. It talks about techniques to use for these kids, how to get the kids or the parents, because bottom line, no matter where a child is involved, whether it be school, I discovered this little insight. When George used to, and you know, I was thinking about this. I'm having a squirrel moment,
right.
But bring me back.
Yes, sure.
when we talk about April being Autism Month, I think about it, and sometimes at schools, the spring is a really tough time because kids, I mean, we're smelling the lilacs in the air, right? And the green and the sun and all this is exciting. But if you take a child with a diagnosis, they too are feeling it, because these kids, they have, they can absorb energy, I think, from all those around them, which exasperates a lot of their characteristics. Sometimes I wonder if April is a time, because for us, April was an awful time, because playground is an awful time for kids with neurobiological diagnosis because of just the chaos and kids running around and all the exposures and all that. So I often wonder if that's why April tends to be Autism Month. But getting back to where I was going with this is it rolled out, and I'm really excited because what it does is it's got a lot of techniques. And I have to say that, yes, we are all scouts that are talking in this video. We're all in uniform. It's adults that are talking. We have a friend of mine. Not only is he a scouter, but he is also a licensed psychologist. And we're giving techniques. But even though we're in these khaki and green uniforms for the Boy Scouts of America, these techniques and this video, these training can be used for anybody. It'd be great for Sunday school teachers. We did surveys following it because it's really important that people give us feedback. So my email is amongst all that stuff. And if people do see it and they want to give us impact or feedback, it's very important to me because feedback is supposed to be good. The hard part is we can't change the video, but the study guide that goes with it, love to have additional information. But anybody can use this, and that's what the survey said. People are going to take it to their churches. They're going to take it to their teachers. Again, we're not pros, but we've experienced it. And the people that talk on the video are very candid. And sometimes it's hard to hear some of the stuff, but in actuality, somebody is saying it, and you're going, yes, I understand it.
Is it just a lack of awareness, or is there actually I don't know, maybe just sort of a prejudice against, I mean, by the, it seemed like, you know, even a, you know, Sunday school, youth group activities, you know, scouting, those kinds of things would be actually good activities probably, but there's, I suppose, the chaos side of it is maybe always kind of a challenge.
Scouting is a character building organization, and it's very structured, and it's got life skills. That's what makes it really something that draws people near and magnetizes people. The thing that's difficult, and it's how do I put it? People refer to kids with MBDs as a blind disease or a blind condition, because when you look at kids with neurobiological diagnosis, you don't see it because it's all internal. And I hate to say it, but when you see a child that has maybe Down syndrome or somebody that might have a brace or something, initially when you see that, you almost know how to innately deal with that individual. The hard part is when you deal with a child with an NBD, it's what I call ages and stages. It's like when you work with a child, let's say you've got two kids that are 11-year-old and a boy that's 13, and the 13-year-old is maybe 4 inches shorter than the 11-year-old, and just by his size, people think he's the older one. That's kind of how it works with my sister and I. I was born 5'10", and my sister's 5'2", and I'm not kidding. Wherever we went, everybody always thought that I was the older sister. So it's hilarious because she always says, this is my little sister, even at my young age right now. But anyway, getting back to it. So no, it's not that people don't seek out that unless they live with it or they deal with it. And so what you find is that, there is a prejudice. I have to say that. I didn't advise my family until like 7 years after my son was diagnosed, because there was a prejudice. A lot of times parents think that it can be parenting skills. Oh, that child is spoiled. You hear people saying, yeah, that kid gets his way and the parents give in to him all the time. Well, what happens with these kids is that's not always the way. There's techniques like giving them choices. You create the choices, but it's A or B. But so I would say that's why. And the thing is, we all know knowledge is powerful. And in Boy Scouts and any other civic organization pretty much like that, but I'm just, you know, I wear the khaki shirt, we are very much into training adults on how to be better leaders. When Baden Powell, just as an FYI, started scouting, back, you know, 100 years ago, he didn't need to teach people how to work with kids, or he needed to teach them how to camp. Well, people nowadays know how to camp. It's how to work with these different kids.
No, that's great. I was, you know, thinking even just as you're talking about the kind of resources available, and we'll.
I know I saw you making notes.
We'll make a connection on our website too, and just post it there. But is there? I mean, when you have the opportunity to speak, is there sort of the number one tip for adults in how to deal with, respond to, encourage, or help kids with a diagnosis? I mean, is there sort of one or two things that just always come to the surface, say, if I only have 30 seconds, this is what I'm going to say? So.
Okay, if I only have 30 seconds, first of all, it can be used for both neurotypical as well as diagnosed. It's telling kids on what's happening, not just saying, like I used that reference about the beach, we're going to the beach today. A child with a diagnosis doesn't understand necessarily what that means in terms of what do I take with. It's we're going to the beach. Don't forget your suit. Don't forget your towel, your sunscreen, your water, shoes, blah, blah, blah. It's basically trying to define what you're doing. It's letting everybody know what's happening, how it's happening, and when it's happening. Another thing is patience. Patience, I know, is a virtue. Being patient, and I'd say the second thing is talk to a parent. Now, you don't walk up to a parent that's never told you that you think your child, because I know we people laugh, because when you meet somebody who has a child that has a diagnosis, or even an older child that has a diagnosis, we all self diagnose everybody, but we all have a little something. It's when it takes over your life. But you can walk up to a parent and say, I noticed that Susie does this or Freddie does that. Do you have any insight that what I can do to help them? And you're going to find that a parent, even though they didn't want to tell anybody because they're afraid, they are more than thrilled to share with you positive techniques for their child. So talking to the parents, and then is, I would say, would be number one, talking to the child, but along that, I guess they're all kind of together, is taking consideration that just talk to the whole bunch and explain everything.
Yeah, good words. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more. Let's talk about how children maybe with diagnoses are related to by other children. We'll get to that and more coming up. 877-933-2484. That's our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. Mary Wangren, businesswoman, wife, support group leader, advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism and other neurobiological disorders. And she has advocated for those children and young adults who don't necessarily fit in because they display characteristics. She provides education seminars to teach and train special parents and special kids. And we'll talk more about some of those training resources and issues that come up as we talk autism and NBDs today. 877-933-2484. Today, back in the studios, we talk about autism, Asperger syndrome, other neurobiological diagnoses, and talk about some encouragement, some training in that area as well. You have some questions, you can join us at 877-93-FAITH, or maybe a comment, and you can always drop us a note, too, online, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. I want to talk about how maybe kids tend to get treated. If, did your son experience maybe bullying, or, every kid gets... embarrassed and bothered in going through school. I mean, it's just tough anyway. But do they end up sort of being targeted sometimes?
They absolutely get targeted. Yeah, that's a really soft subject in our family. Growing up, George was very much bullied. Hmm. There were times where the sad part is that they do tend to get bullied because with their peers, these kids are usually 2 to 4 years mature behind their peers. So you've got these kids, and usually third, fourth grade is when you start to see where these kids are developing their friendship and that social piece is happening. And with kids with NBDs, not necessarily so. And a lot of times, some of the characteristics is one is they don't always look at you when you're talking to them. So kids don't, when they don't look at you, they're not getting the social cues and they don't see the facial expression. So long and the short of it, because of the characteristics, they can get in the face of some of these kids. And also because of that, they can be the ones that are targeted because of the way they respond. The sad part is sometimes with kids with diagnosis, a negative response to them is better than no response at all. And that's the hardest part, is trying to get them to define. Like George would say something, and if it got a laugh in the class, great. Well, he realized it got a laugh, so he would do it over and over and, that kind of thing. But yeah, they definitely are the targets, and it's, you have to be very cautious of it.
Do you worry about? I guess we all parents worry about personal safety for your children. But I'm wondering, does that sort of become a continual concern? Just thinking about, moms worried about their kids out rioting in Baltimore. There's a classic video going on there. But you wouldn't want your son to get tied up in a riot.
It's interesting because parents do worry about when they're young. These are the kids who dart out across the street without looking. They're the ones who hop on their bikes and not even think about stoplights or whatever. That's why you have to instruct them on the rules. They are very rule bound. But yeah, it would be, I would be very fearful. We talk about it a lot. And one thing for my son, because he's so rule-bound and he knows that riots and protests are not positive, he wouldn't. But if he found himself, I would be very much afraid. Kids with NBDs are not always good at trying to defend themselves or try to communicate a situation. Example, if a child with an NBD is driving and they get picked up for speeding or even a headlight out or a taillight out, a police officer would then try to talk to them. They are not going to necessarily be like you and I. I'm always yes, sir, no, sir, and I listen and I don't object to what the police officer. Not necessarily with these kids. They all, and I hate to say it, they make great agents or attorneys. They're great ones to argue and defend themselves. George was taught at a very early age in a social class that when he gets his license, that he should keep a card that says, hi, my name is this. This is my driver's license, and I have Asperger's and some of the characteristics. You don't put it in the glove compartment because, you know, you're going to have something silver in your face when you're reaching over to the glove compartment. But it's, I hate to say it, but right now there are specialists in the court system that deal with kids with NBDs because they don't know how to shut their mouth. They don't know how to defend themselves. So they end up getting arrested, I hate to say. Yeah. Plus, I have to say, and when I worry about the riots and things, because of the spatial piece for them and tactile and stuff, they can become very physical as well. So, yeah, I think it's a constant as every kid hits each different level, explaining to them what's going on.
Would a career like an attorney, is that an attainable goal?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. If that's what, I mean, if that's what they, basically, if that's their forte, yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. let's take a call from Andy in Janesville. Andy, thanks for the call. You're adopting a special needs child. Is that right?
Yes, thank you for having me on. My question for you is, he has been diagnosed with all sorts of things, but in each case, those things were later retracted, and he's been given all sorts of medications, and those have changed over time. So right now, he is taking a couple of medications plus a night aid. But the question I have lots of them, but maybe the big one, when he came to me about 5 months ago, I did get him plugged in with a general physician, and he also has type 1 diabetes. So he has a nurse there as well. But who would be the right person to go to help figure out a treatment for him, whether it's a different medication or what would you suggest?
And how old is your child?
He's in the fourth grade.
Fourth grade. Okay.
10 years old.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
One of the things that I would advocate for, and this was advocated for us when George was first diagnosed, and is to find, I know a physician is terrific, and asking a physician, finding out about a therapist. There are therapists out there that that specialize in NBDs, you know, any of these, whatever his diagnosis is, they work with behavioral pieces. They also, you know, so not only is he taking medication, but he's also learning techniques and behavioral pieces. I would recommend a therapist. I think they're terrific. I believe in them. Because it's a place to go where these people understand these kids.
Yeah. And
does that kind of answer your question?
No, that's great. Yeah.
Especially, I don't know if the caller's still there, but these professionals will also talk about medications, you know, and especially if you're fortunate to get a psychiatrist, I mean, that's their forte in terms of they're a medical doctor as well. You know, they can write the prescriptions, but the therapists really know the medications that are out there.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe take a moment to talk about resources, and you know, maybe you talk about support groups, how helpful they were, but you found online things as well. What are some things that you would recommend, maybe just places to go?
Places to go would be CHAD, which is CHAD is for Children's and Adults with ADD. That's a national organization. And on there, different CHAD groups throughout the country, at different states, they have local state levels as well as national levels. That's a great organization. Autism Society, they have organizations, and they also have ideas. Even I think when I was on there not too long ago, they were talking about how to even create your own support group. I even think talking to a church. Sometimes these groups aren't always as advertised as you want. One thing that I found about is the school systems are not always as forthcoming with that information because of the HIPAA and all that kind of stuff, which sometimes I won't even go there on that opinion. But anyway, but those are areas that that you can go to and find out about support groups. I think support groups are terrific. Sometimes what limits them is the child care for the children, that the SIBs or the child that's diagnosed. That's one piece that sometimes is difficult. But I think it's a great place to go because what you do is you end up with like common-minded people looking for the same goal. And the fun part is even when I speak and I talk to people who have children that are younger than I am, or younger than, oh my gosh, That's the grandparents. Sure. No, I'm just kidding. When I talk to people whose children are younger than mine, they kind of look to me like, whew, get through it.
Yeah.
You know, the successes and, yeah.
Well, you bring up maybe a good point that there are some opportunities for the church and a small group, just caring individuals to provide some support and encouragement for the parent and maybe the child care needs. I mean, that's not an easy thing to maybe step in and give the parents a weekend away, right?
If you're absolutely, you know. That's the hardest part is getting away, because there's not always the resources, especially with your depending on what the diagnosis is with your child. But yeah, there is definitely talking to youth ministers, people that are involved with the kids of the younger ages, your Christian educators at the churches and stuff. A lot of times they have the resources of local groups. A lot of times they even get the notes and the letters and the flyers, and they stash it away for someone to ask about those kinds of things. There are also caregivers that there are people who do work with respites, which get these kids that allow parents a time to get away. Because I have to say, the height of incidence of divorce with families with kids with neurobiological is one of the highest. It's something like 65 to 70% of marriages aren't always successful. And that's because there are two individuals who have two different thoughts in terms of parenting skills. And sometimes it precludes itself of not being a successful marriage.
So you really need to work through those issues, don't you? Particularly if your child has that diagnosis, just to really be able to talk with your spouse and say, all right, how are we going to approach this? How we handle this?
Absolutely. And that's where sometimes when you even talk about having your child go to a therapist, sometimes that therapist will also either work with you or send you in the right direction. I have to admit, George's therapist became my therapist, because there are times where you need to have just a neutral party who can hear what you have to say and nod and give you ideas and recommendations. And I'm a huge proponent of a therapist, because sometimes you don't always get that. Or go to your minister. Yeah.
You never stop being a parent. Do you ever, I mean, are you sort of, quote unquote, through it now? I mean, do you feel like, well, George is 23.
I would love to say that. Okay. We're still now, cross your fingers, everybody out there. We're going to attempt to do the driving test. Every stage in a neurotypical child, every stage goes through its moments, getting the job. We're now trying to find out where George going back to school. Yeah. So every stage is new. The part that scares me, I'll be honest with you, and to the listeners, is the fact that there's a group of these kids that are now getting to be between 23 and 30 years old. This is kind of the new or the diagnosed that are out there. And the next stage, and I don't know, you might see me out there doing this, getting my own new job or whatever, but is employment and getting the employers and the bosses and those people out there that hire and fire to understand how these kids work.
Lots of great information that Mary has done. We'll get them linked up on our website here after the show. We also post the interview. And we'd love to have you join with us. If you missed part of it today, you can come on back anytime and listen to that and pass it on to a friend. Go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. That's myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. Mary Wangren joining
Thank
us
you.
Today. Good to see you again.
Thank you for letting me go on and on.
Oh, it's always good to see you. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we invite you to tune in again tomorrow.